This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball. Featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's Matt Jones.
A little bit of a statement weekend for the Razorbacks as they sweep LSU at Baumwalker Stadium. Arkansas also beat Arkansas State on Tuesday night. They go into game two of their series against the Red Wolves on a six-game winning streak. Really a nice stretch here for the Razorbacks. Matt Jones with Bubba Carpenter, the color analyst for the Razorbacks on the Razorback Sports Network. And Bubba, I think that we expected Arkansas to win the series against LSU, but I think what was surprising to me, maybe two things. Number one was the sweep. Number two was how well Arkansas pitched against an LSU lineup that came into the series, you know, one of the top two or three in most of offensive categories in the SEC. The Razorbacks really held the Tigers down. And we've seen that a few times this year where they're pitching really well against good lineups at Baumwalker Stadium. And you kind of go back to talking about getting one of those top eight super regional or one of those top eight national seeds where you can host a super regional. This is why this team really plays a good brand of baseball in its home ballpark.
I tell you what, it was impressive, Matt. You know, you watch LSU coming in, and, you know, I always like to look at the offensive numbers and see what a team's doing. And they came in really hot to Baumwalker, and, you know, they're averaging eight runs a game. And I thought it was really kind of neat that they scored six runs in three games against us. So, I mean, they really just – I mean, the Arkansas pitch staff did a great job. A lot of it goes down to game plan. I think they had a great game plan against it. We can talk about that in a minute if you want when we're breaking down the pitchers. But I just thought they did a really good job of just game planning against LSU and then going out there and executing that plan and just really kept those guys, especially the top of their lineup, is really good. And just kept those guys off balance all weekend. It was fun to watch.
LSU came into the series batting .303. Arkansas held them to a .210 average over three games. So that's 93 points below their season average. I went back and looked this up against Kentucky when they came here in March. Arkansas held Kentucky to 122 points below their batting average coming into the series. And against Mississippi State a couple of weeks ago, they held the Bulldogs to 103 points below their season average when they were in Fayetteville. Going back to what I said earlier, there's something just about, I think, pitching in Baumwalker Stadium. You know, it's funny that the couple of teams they've lost to are Illinois State and Southeastern Louisiana in that, you know, Southeastern game. They had an inning that got away from them, but playing against better competition, their pitching has really stepped up at Baum.
I think a lot of it, Matt, is, you know, we talk about the advantage of being Baumwalker. You got the fans behind you, but I think more importantly, our pitchers are really comfortable on that mound. And there's just something about it. You even hear major league pitchers talk about the mounds that they really like around Major League Baseball. And there's certain mounds that they like. Sometimes it's not even their home mound. It could be a mound on the road that they go to, but they like the feel of the mound. They like the backdrop. They like everything about it. And I just think that has a lot to do with the pitching staff, how comfortable they are here at home. And then once again, I'll go back to the scouting report. We just did a great job of attacking these guys and kind of getting away from what we had done, you know, not falling into a rut, I guess you can say. Whether you want to talk about Connor Nolan's fastball, you could tell that the LSU hitters were in the front of the box looking curveball because that's been his dominant pitch. Well, he blew them away first time through the lineup with fastballs. You know, Hagan Smith kept them off balance. He threw a ton of changeups in the first inning, which he usually – it's fourth, fifth, sixth inning before that changeup really gets going for Hagan Smith. He had it in the first inning. And you could tell the LSU hitters were just baffled by it because they didn't game plan for that. And I think it's awesome when they're able to kind of throw a curveball at them, I guess, you know, sort of to say, and get away from what's been working in the past and go to a different pitch because they spend a lot of time on those scouting reports. And I know the Arkansas hitters, they spend a ton of time looking at who that opposing pitching staff coming in. They know their tendencies and all that. And I thought it was really cool the way we got away from those tendencies and went to a different pitch, and it was really effective.
Hagan Smith throws seven scoreless innings against LSU in game two of that series. Two hits, one walk, seven strikeouts, 98 pitches to get through seven innings. So he was really efficient. SEC named him the SEC Freshman of the Week this week. The College Baseball Foundation named him the National Pitcher of the Week. The College Baseball Foundation is affiliated with the College Baseball Hall of Fame. Bubba, the thing about Hagan Smith, I think that stood out to me during his outing was that he went to a 3-2 count against the first two hitters in the LSU lineup, Dylan Cruz and Jacob Berry. Both players probably are going to be first-round draft picks. That LSU lineup probably had three or four first-rounders. He went to 3-2 counts against them, and this is something we've seen with him early in games the last few weeks, you know, against Missouri, against Florida, even against Mississippi State. He walked three batters in the first inning. He's gone to a lot of three-ball counts, but I thought the real big difference was in the LSU game, he got out of those jams, didn't walk the batters, struck both of them out swinging. And I thought those two strikeouts really set the tone for him, because those first couple of innings have kind of been when he's been shaky. You know, it's like if he can get past inning one or inning two, he usually settles in. He settled in after two batters. And I thought that was a really big deal for him to work out of those three ball counts.
I think so. You know, at the start of that game, Dylan Cruz, he had a 3-2 fastball, probably a little bit up out of the zone. He chased it. But what set that up were the couple of really good changeups before, kind of slowed his bat down a little bit with those changeups, and then blew a fastball by him 3-2, kind of got him to, you know, kind of snuck it by him and made him jump at the ball a little bit. And then Jacob Berry made a great 3-2 pitch on the outside corner to get Jacob Berry out after going 3-2. But once again, I think those fastballs, he got those fastballs by him. Well, the Jacob Berry pitch was just a really good pitch. It was right on the corner. But I think he got him out because he slowed him down early in the count with that changeup, which they weren't expecting. But you're right. I mean, for him to get those first two outs was huge. And then from there on, he cruised. And, you know, I think a lot of it, they talked about, you know, they changed his pregame routine a little bit. They spent a little more time, got him lathered up a little bit more before the game. And I think that was kind of a factor too. He came in really hot, where before, you know, he's kind of a even keel type pitcher. You know, you see a lot of emotion out of him, but he came into that game and he was already worked up, had a lather going. And I think it really helped him a lot. Whatever they did in that pregame warmup, a few more pitches, maybe a little bit more long toss, just really got his body heated up. I think it helped, Matt.
Arkansas got two great starts over the weekend. Mentioned Smith, Connor Noland. You know, I mean, had he been able to make it through the sixth inning without giving up a hit, you know, you're probably looking at him at a potential pitcher of the week award. He took a no hitter into the sixth. I think it was two outs in the sixth before he gives up his first hit. And then they just came in succession. I think LSU got four straight singles against him. Three of those were RBI singles that actually gave LSU a 3-2 lead. And you're in that game and Arkansas's kind of cruising along. They'd had some chances to score runs and left runners out there, but you're feeling good about where they are. It's 2-0. And then all of a sudden, Nolan, when he runs out of gas, it runs out quickly. We've seen that with him a few times this year, but he has a great start. And I thought it was a really big deal for Arkansas to come back in the seventh inning and put together a rally after LSU had taken the lead. That showed me a lot about this team.
Well, I think so. And, you know, Connor was here's what's awesome. So when I'm up in the booth, I watch the opposing hitter. You can tell a whole lot about what's going on off his reaction. I talk about Peyton Stovall when he was struggling, how he took pitches, said that, hey, he's going to figure it out. He's going to be a good hitter. Good hitters take pitches the right way. The LSU hitters, Matt, they were in the front of the box. You could tell they were on curveball timing. They were loading late. They were getting their foot down late. They were looking breaking ball early in the count, and they weren't getting it. And Connor just kept pumping fastballs by them, and they didn't make it. It took them a while to make an adjustment to that, and I thought that was to see. And that's a huge tip of the hat to the coaching staff, to Michael Turner behind the plate. Cause you know, Michael's the guy calling a lot of those pitches. He'll occasionally look to the dugout, but he's calling a lot of those pitches. He can tell when that hitter's creeping up in the box. Well, it's not hard to say, to figure out. The guy's creeping up in the front of the box, he's typically looking off speed. And so Connor just throwing that fastball by him. So I thought that was awesome from a baseball perspective, me sitting up there in the booth watching that, I was pumped up about it. And, boy, Connor just looked great. But the inning where he got in trouble, you know, he hit a guy with a 1-2 pitch and got the next guy out, then got a 3-2 strikeout. And then it was base hit, base hit, base hit. And, you know, he really did. I think he just, when he gets tired, that two seam starts getting up in the zone. The breaking ball doesn't have that bite on it, and guys start to hit it.
Big two out rally in the seventh inning of that game. Caden Wallace led off the inning with a single to left field. you're feeling pretty good about where they are because they've got their big boppers, Slavens and Lanzilli, coming up. Both of them go down. Turner gets a single to extend the inning, and then Braden Webb gets one of the big hits that ties the game 3-3. Pitching change. LSU made a lot of those during the game. And then Robert Moore comes in and smokes one past the second baseman, gives Arkansas the lead. Robert Moore really played well in game one of that series, had just the one hit, but he also had a walk. There was another time, Bubba, where he hit one right on the screws, but he hit it right to the second baseman who was playing the shift. He's starting to come around a little bit. Hit a home run last night against Arkansas State. And, you know, we just kind of talk about how this lineup is kind of slowly coming together. And that's a big part of the lineup. They're batting him in the cleanup, at least in the Arkansas State series.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about Robert Moore, and people, when I ask him, they're like, well, what's wrong with Robert? And I'm like, well, there's really nothing. Now, I think he's missing a few pitches that in the past he hasn't missed. But overall, he's hitting a whole lot of balls hard. He's really just had some bad luck. But, you know, I talked about it a lot on the air, and, you know, I try not to be too critical, Matt, especially of another opposing manager. But I really thought Jay Johnson overmanaged that game. I thought he just overcoached. He too many pitching changes, just the pace of the game. When he brought Reiselman in to face Robert Moore, Fontenot was out there. Fontenot's a veteran guy, real good slider, tough to square up, good numbers against lefties. Well, they brought Reiselman in, who's a fastball pitcher. And I said, as soon as they brought him in, I said, hey, this is huge for us. They're doing us a big favor right here, because this guy throws 96, 97, 98. And I said, Robert Moore's probably the best fastball hitter on the team. Well, sure enough, he gets a fastball and smokes it into right field and drives in two runs. And I just think that's, with all the scouting we've got, I was really surprised that they made that move when they did, because that played right into our strength. And so as a result, he gets a two-out RBI. We go on to win the game. But, you know, and I, like I said, I try not to be too critical of another guy, but the way he managed that game, that whole slow pace of baseball, whether you call it West Coast baseball, whatever you want to call it, I don't know that that's going to play very well in the SEC, especially with LSU fans, because they're fast-paced teams. They usually play a fast game. Even their hitters took forever getting into the batter's box. And so, I don't know, it was good to see, though. But back on Robert, he's come up huge for us. I mean, makes some great defensive plays. You know, the double play ball up the middle was huge. What was that, in the eighth inning? Bases loaded. It was kind of a cue shot up the middle by Jordan Thompson, their shortstop. And it had a weird spin on it. And it was right over the second base bag. You know, bases loaded, one out. And Robert fielded it, stepped on the bag, threw to first, all in one move, and got the double play to end the inning. I mean, that was a huge play also. And, you know, we all remember his SportsCenter play out into right field, where he went way to his left, out into shallow right, glove side turn, made a perfect throw to Peyton Stovall at first to get the out. It ended up on SportsCenter. But he just brings so many things to the lineup. And, man, he's a good player. That's why he's going to play in the big leagues one day.
He plays a different position, but you know what he reminds me of, Bubba? He reminds me of Alex Bregman when Bregman was at LSU. Anything you hit in his direction, he was like a vacuum cleaner. And that's kind of the way Robert Moore is there at second base. You've got to really hit the ball well to get it outside of his range. And there just aren't a lot of second basemen out there who are as rangy as he is.
Well, you're right. And the thing he does, Matt, if you watch him, he's got a really good instinct. They'll play the shift with, I mean, they shift a whole lot. I mean, everyone's doing it in SEC now, but you'll watch Robert shift, and then maybe with two strikes he might take a step over, or maybe he sees the sign from the catcher, whatever's, he'll cheat a step one way or the other. Inevitably, that extra step is the reason he gets to a ball and makes a play where other guys don't get to it. But he's so much fun. I told Phil last night on the air, I said, it looks like when Robert's fielding a ground ball, he's on fast forward, because his body moves so fast. His feet are so quick. His gloves quick. Everything about him is just like, it's like fast forwarded. But he's a lot of fun to watch. I typically find myself videoing him a lot of times, just as an example of how to play the game, play second base. And he's fun to watch.
Game three, Arkansas wins that one 6-2. Jackson Wiggins, he pitched around it the whole game, didn't he? I mean, I think he gave up 9 hits. There were runners just all over the bases in his 5 1/3 innings. But, you know, there's something to be said, I think, for not having your best stuff and he didn't against LSU, but then also being able to work out of those jams. And, you know, it was really surprising that LSU was only up 1-0 in the fifth inning for all of the success that they had against Jackson Wiggins. You know, you hear Dave Van Horn talk about it a lot of times. He's, you know, that's pitching. Part of pitching is, you know, when you get yourself into those situations, you got to figure out a way to get out of the predicaments. And, you know, for the most part, Jackson Wiggins did that, and he got a no decision in the game. But I thought that there was something, you know, really good to be gleaned out of his performance, even though he gave up a lot of hits, the fact that he was able to work around base runners so well. You know, and we've seen that from him this year, Bubba, haven't we? I mean, it almost seems like he might be more comfortable pitching out of the stretch.
I think so. And you know, the thing I love about Jackson Wiggins, nothing phases him. I mean, you got guys stepping out, slow playing him. You got all kinds of antics from the LSU hit, and nothing phases him. But the thing that I was impressed with probably the most, Matt, is that Matt Hobbs and DVH stayed with him. Because I don't know if you remember a couple years ago, there were a couple of times Isaiah Campbell got in trouble in the first inning. He was out. But I think Dave has so much confidence in these guys. He leaves them out there and, you know, bases loaded jam in the first, you know, bases loaded again in the second. You know, first of all, in the first inning, Caden Wallace made a really good play going to his left to end that inning on a ball that could have easily gotten through into left field and scored two runs. But so there were some good defensive plays behind him. But I love the fact that they've got confidence in these guys and they're leaving them out there. Now, you know, I would say that Jackson was probably a pitch or two away from coming out of that game in the second inning, but mm-hmm. he found a way to get out of it. And I think it's huge. Every time a guy works through something like that, he gains confidence in himself. And plus Dave Van Horn and Matt, they get confidence in him too. Hey, this guy can get out of this. And I really like that because I want as a player, I always wanted to know that, hey, my coach has confidence in me. You know, I believe in him. He believes in me. And it's a two-way street there. And boy, you could really see it with Jackson Wiggins. And I thought it was awesome.
I thought he was going to come out of the game in the third inning, Bubba. He walked Jordan Thompson and Josh Pearson in consecutive at bats. And you've got Jobert coming up to the plate. And, you know, this is kind of a sticky situation. They stuck with him. He strikes out Jobert. He strikes out McManus looking to end the inning. And it seemed like that third inning almost kind of gave him a little bit of confidence, because after he got through the third, the fourth inning, the first part of the fifth inning, that looked like the Jackson Wiggins that we were used to seeing.
Well, you're right. He walked Pearson on four pitches, walked Jordan Thompson with a 3-1 pitch. And then it's like all of a sudden he just bowed his neck and got out of it. And I thought it was awesome. And then after that, like you said, he really was a totally different pitcher. So, you know, but it feels good when you get out of a situation like that. I really think that's going to help Jackson down the road. You know, the fact that he's able to pitch out of a few situations that, you know, and that's he wouldn't have had the chance to do. And so it really, it gets me excited thinking about, you know, how good he can be, because he wasn't his best. You know, he wasn't his best at all in game three, but he found a way to get out of those jams. And that's what good pitchers do.
It almost feels like with Wiggins and with Smith, there's going to be one or two innings where you kind of have to hold your breath with them a little bit. And if they can get out of it, they're going to pitch fine. You know, it's just a matter of being able to get out of, you know, some of those. And a lot of times it's self-inflicted. I think with Wiggins, it's more hits than it is walks or hit batters, although he has hit some batters this year. With Smith, it feels almost more like it's a command issue with him. Like he'll go through a little stretch where, you know, he'll walk some guys. You see him with a lot of two out walks, for instance, this year. But what do you think it is about the two of them that make them better as the game goes along? Because that's not always the case with the starting pitcher. A lot of times, you know, I mean, we were mentioning this with Connor Noland earlier. You know, he kind of runs out of gas later in his innings. Do you expect him to come out and pitch strong? What do you think it is about those two that they're better maybe later in their outings than they are early on?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, you look at some of these guys that have all the antics on the mound, the Florida pitcher. Can't think of his name right now. The lefty.
Barco.
That has all that crap going on, Matt. You see these guys expend so much energy. They're fired up. You know, when they get in the game, you know, they're going nuts. You look at a guy, Matt Cronin, you know, Doug Willie would smack him around before he went in, and he was fire from the first pitch on. You contrast that to Jackson Wiggins and Hagan Smith. They're different. They're laid back. They're even keel. Nothing phases them. And I think that allows them to work through jams. They don't get over. I don't know. They don't get all worked up about what's going on in the field. They just keep going out and executing pitches. Now, you know, the thing that worries me a little bit about both of them is maybe a 2-out 4-pitch walk where I don't know if they just lose focus. And then once that runner's on, they get locked back in again. I don't know what that is, but at some point during the season, that's going to come back and bite them because they're going to not make that pitch. But so far they've done a great job of finding ways to get out of those jams. And like I said, that's what the good ones do. They dial up that pitch when they need it.
All right, Bubba, you mentioned this earlier, and I want to talk about this, and it's the stalling tactics that LSU employed throughout the entire weekend. It was obvious what they were doing. Jay Johnson's philosophy seems to be that they're going to do everything they can to throw off the momentum of a lineup, throw off the momentum of a hitter. We saw tons of conferences with hitters throughout the weekend, and then the pitching changes were just I've never seen – such a strategy with pitching changes. You know, you would see him send out his catcher to talk to a pitcher when it was clear they were about to make a pitching change. He's on the walkie with the catcher talking to him right up until the minute that the umpire comes out to break up that conference. And then he comes out to make the pitching change. And so what you're having is these 3-5 minute delays in between at bats. And I thought it was a really good thing for Arkansas that they were able to work through that, because that's got to be pretty difficult. I don't like that style of managing. You talked about it earlier. It just doesn't seem like it's something that really plays in the SEC. And I think you're right. I think it's going to be something that, unless Jay Johnson wins big at LSU, that's going to really grate on the nerves of those Tiger fans. They're not going to put up with Bush League stuff for very long. Whether or not you want to call this Bush League managing is up to you, but I kind of think it is. I didn't like the stalling tactics. What did you think about it? And what did you think about the way the Razorbacks responded to it?
I thought the Razorbacks did awesome. I really do. I think they kept their cool. They didn't let it phase them at all. But, you know, from a fan perspective, sitting up in the booth watching as a baseball fan, I hated it because it's showmanship. I don't know if it's Bush League, Matt. They call it West Coast baseball. That's why you play a 3-2 game out west.
It's not
west
in the spirit of the game, though, right?
No, it's not. It's not. Because – and I think the umpires – I tell you what, they're frustrated. They were really frustrated. Here's what gets me. Contrast that with Dave Van Horn. Example last night. Dave comes out of the dugout, 2 steps out of the dugout. He's pointing to the bullpen. They know instantly. Bullpen, guys leaving the bullpen, coming. Jay Johnson, every time you just described the whole scenario, he would stand there and wait till the last minute. And then once the umpire got out there, he'd call to the bullpen. Or, you know, he's sending the catcher out, you know, multiple times to stall. Well, look, you as I coach, I'm way ahead. I'm 2 innings ahead of where we're at in the game right there. I'm looking at when that other team's going to roll their lineup over. I'm looking at possible matchups, you know, an inning and a half from now. He's got to be doing the same thing. He acts like he's surprised when, wait, we got Brady Slavens coming up. I need a lefty up, so let's go stall. You know, it's just crazy to me that this guy, and he's won where he's been. I mean, he's had success, but I just don't think that kind of baseball is going to play in the SEC. And I think it's going to take we jokingly on the air said last night, I asked Phil, I said, you think DVH could pick up the phone and call Jay and say, hey, you know, that slow play stuff's not going to play here in the SEC. and Phil made a good comment. He's like, look, I think it's going to take someone like a Skip Bergman or Paul Maneri to come up and say, hey, man, you might want to speed this up a little bit because you're playing LSU baseball right now. And that's not how we do things around here. And that's not how we do things in the SEC. I think it's going to take someone like that or them winning. I guess winning cures a lot. If LSU turns this thing around and wins, ends up in Omaha, I think people will probably overlook that. But at some point, people are going to get frustrated with it and things are going to have to change.
That's an antsy bunt at LSU. I think didn't smoke the wall. I think he won an SEC championship there, and they still ran him out of town in about 3 or 4 years in between Burtman and Maneri. They had a really veteran umpire crew in Fayetteville last weekend. Jeff Head, Scott Klein, and Mark Winters are all umpires that you see on the last day at Hoover. You see him in Omaha at the College World Series. In my opinion, I think Jeff Head is one of the better umpires in our league. You know, I like to watch their temperament and the way that they handle coaches. And I've always been really impressed with Jeff Head. He's the one who called strike three on Braden Joubert at a really critical point in game three. LSU's got two runners on. They're up 1-0. Joubert falls behind 0-2. He thinks that he has checked his swing, but Scott Klein, the home plate umpire, says that he went around. Joubert clearly upset about that call, right? Walks almost halfway to the Arkansas dugout on the grass. And you can see the Arkansas players are getting on him from the dugout, get back in the box. Scott Klein motions for him to get back in the box. Whether or not he didn't hear Klein or whether or not he was ignoring him, Jeff Head, he's got the stopwatch out. And I looked at it, Bubba. I think you're supposed to have 20 seconds before you get back in the box. I actually had it at 22 seconds from the time that he stepped out of the box until Jeff Head called that strike three. I thought it was absolutely the right call. Almost looked like Joubert was in his head a little bit for the rest of that game. He got called up, rung up on a strike three later in the eighth inning at another critical point in the game. That was a really big call, but I thought it was the right call by the umpire staff. And we had actually talked about this a couple of weeks ago. If you remember, Scott Klein was the home plate umpire for that Florida State game where Derek Fabian got called out for a similar box violation. Just your thoughts on how that all went down.
Well, first of all, I feel like I apologize to Scott Klein because when he tossed Fabian out, you know, I got people sending me stuff, little clips about it on Twitter and everything. And I made a remark about, you know, that I don't like it. I don't remember exactly what I said. But then I went back, other people sent me the whole thing, what had happened. It started well with Fabian. Well, that's what happened here. If you just look at what happened right there, you're like, eh, they shouldn't have done that. But if you look at the totality of it, what happened from the start of the game on, and they had warned Joubert multiple times, get back in the box, get back in the box. Scott Klein kept telling him the at bat before it was the same thing, get back in the box. He didn't like a couple of strike calls, so he stepped out. And I mean, it was just, it went on and on. So I was so glad that Jeff Head, and I think if Jeff Head wouldn't have called it, I think Scott Klein was getting ready to. But I thought it was the right call. But if you don't see the whole thing, you think, well, that's stupid. I can't believe it. But yeah, the antics from him, just, it was ridiculous. And even Jacob Berry, it took that guy forever to get in the batter's box multiple times. He would just stroll up to the batter's box. It would take him a long time in the on deck circle. Everyone's waiting on him. And I don't know. I don't like it, but I was glad they called Joubert out right there. I thought it was absolutely the right call.
I was a little surprised Jay Johnson didn't get tossed in between innings. He got pretty heated with Scott Klein back behind home plate. One other thing on LSU stalling, I thought one of the funniest moments of the weekend, Bubba, I'm not sure if you heard it, John Williams, who's the public address announcer at BOM, when they brought in Grant Taylor at some point during Sunday's game, again, it was after, you know, a bunch of delays before they finally make the pitching change. And John Williams says, eventually pitching for LSU. I thought that was a pretty funny moment.
That's awesome. See, I don't get to hear stuff like that in my headset.
Let me ask you this. Grounded out, but. Did you hear when Riley Cooper came in on Thursday night when they played Dude Looks Like a Lady?
No. See, I'm the good stuff. No, I didn't get that.
I think that was one of the funniest moments I could remember at BOM. And if you haven't seen it, Riley Cooper's a big guy. I mean, he's probably, what do you think, Bubba, 250? 260 probably, but
oh, his left butt cheek's 260.
Well, he's got long hair, but he's got a big beard, and he comes running out of the bullpen, and Jimmy Sanchez turns on Dude Looks Like a Lady, and everybody is still talking about that two innings later. I'm kind of walking around the stadium. I don't like to sit in the press box for a real long amount of time. I like to get up and talk to people, and you know, people were still talking about that two innings after it happened. That was a hilarious moment at what was kind of, and it provided a little bit of levity, I guess, at what was kind of a tense moment in the game, because I think this was in the seventh inning when Arkansas was trying to rally and they're down 3-2. And it felt like it just kind of, you know, let some of that nervous energy out of the ballpark. And
see, that's awesome. I mean, it goes back to Bomb Marker, the best place in baseball to play in college baseball. But I didn't realize he was a player, Matt. I was guilty. I saw him before the game out on the field, and I thought, man, it's a bus driver or he's something. He did not look like a college baseball player. First of all, he looks like he's 35 years old. It's not really built like a baseball player. So, that was awesome. But hey, with it all being all said and done, the guy's got pretty good stuff. He's got a pretty good slider. He's got two different sliders that he uses. One's kind of get me over, one's to get me out. So he's got pretty good stuff. He's got good numbers. So he doesn't look like a pitcher really, or a baseball player, but he did a good job out there.
6'2", 264 is Riley Cooper, a left-hander. He actually transferred into LSU from Arizona, one of those many players that followed Jay Johnson, either transferring from Arizona or who had been committed to the Wildcats and flipped their commitment to LSU after he was hired there. Real quick, before we finish our LSU discussion, I want to talk about the bullpen. They pitched really well against the Tigers. I think it was 8 2/3 innings without an earned run. There was an unearned run during the game on Thursday night because of a catcher interference call against Michael Turner that allowed them with a base runner, and they were able to bring him around to score. But, you know, you're getting good innings out of Zebulon Vermillion, Brady Tigert, Evan Taylor. But I really thought the one that impressed me the most over the weekend was Zach Morris in the 2 2/3 scoreless innings that he threw in the final game. And, you know, he'd been down there. We're talking about Jackson Wiggins being in trouble. I think Morris might have thrown 30, 40, 50 warm-up pitches because he got up in the second inning and he doesn't come in until the sixth. And you know, just about every time you look down there at the bullpen, he was up moving around or throwing pitches. And I thought that was a pretty good deal for him to be able to perform whenever he finally got his call in from the bullpen.
Well, Zach came up huge for us right there. 2 2/3 innings, 2 hits, 2 strikeouts. Didn't give up any runs. He came in at a crucial point, a couple runners on runner in scoring position, and he looked great. And, you know, we'll talk about it later, but the Tuesday night games, Tuesday, Wednesday, midweek games, that's where he earned that spot. And we talk about it all the time, earning these spots on these weekend games or those midweek games. And he came in and pitched against UAPB and threw one inning, but, you know, struck out the side. I want to say it was like 14 pitches, just looked awesome. And that's how he earned that spot to come in. But boy, that's huge to get another lefty out of that pen that can come in and do a job like that. But all weekend, the bullpen was good. Brady Tigert was really good. He had to deal with a little adversity on a couple of calls where I thought he got squeezed a little bit in that third game, but came back and made really good pitches. So I was really impressed with the bullpen. Evan Taylor was awesome, like he has been all year, and so it was good. It was good to see, and I see a lot of the pieces coming together in that bullpen. And I think we're still maybe one or two guys away from stepping up down there, and we're going to be really, really nasty out of that pen.
We thought Zach Morris was going to be a pitcher who contributed greatly to the back end of SEC games this year. It's taken him a little bit of time, but it seems like he's finally getting to that point to be able to do that. And I think what you said, too, is how big of a deal it is to be able to bring a second left-hander in from the bullpen. Take some pressure off of Evan Taylor, because whenever you need a lefty-lefty matchup, it's Evan Taylor or bust right now, and now you've got a second pitcher who could potentially do that for you. The Whole Hog Baseball Podcast is sponsored by Massage Envy. Go to the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Visit Mike and his staff in Tuscany Square at 2603 West Pleasant Grove Road in Rogers, or in Fayetteville at 3557 North Shiloh Drive. Massage Envy has services for everyone. MassageEnvy.com.
Massage Envy, with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville, has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's Best Day Spa and Best Massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
You know it never goes out of style? A great burger. And for a long time now, the best burgers around have been made at CJ's Butcher Boy. I've been stopping at their Russellville location for years to enjoy a double with bacon, cheese, and all the fixings. Well, the fries are always made fresh, and their shakes are made with real premium ice cream. And now that CJ's Butcher Boy has a Fayetteville location, too, on Weddington, you can bet I'll be there a lot more. CJ's Butcher Boy in Russellville and Fayetteville. When all you do are burgers, they have to be the best.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Now let's look at this week in the SEC, presented by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers.
Every week we say that it kind of feels like a two-team race in the SEC, and it feels even more so after last weekend's games. You know, Arkansas went into the LSU series with a one-game lead in the SEC West, and we're only midway through the conference season, but big weekend it felt like because Arkansas was able to pull away from LSU, take a four-game lead over the Tigers, and they've got a three-game lead now in the division, Bubba, over Texas A&M, who they'll play this weekend in College Station, and over Auburn and over Alabama. It is just really almost baffling what's happening in the SEC West right now. It's like bizarro world outside of Arkansas. You've got A&M and Alabama and Auburn, the teams that were supposed to be at the bottom of the league. They're in contention, and you've got Ole Miss and LSU and Mississippi State, the teams that were supposed to contend with Arkansas. They're down at the bottom. A lot can change over the last 15 games, but I don't think anybody could have seen the SEC West playing out the way it is right now.
I tell you, the biggest surprise for me is still Ole Miss at the bottom and Mississippi State second to the last in the West. That I would have never, you know, LSU, you never know. They usually find a way to end up a little bit higher up at the end of the season. But seeing those two at the bottom, that's just – I would have never guessed that in a million years, especially reading – you read all the preseason hype about, you know, especially Ole Miss. Now, we knew they were looking for starting pitching, but we heard all about their offense. And, boy, they just haven't put anything together. Mississippi State showed signs, you know, losing what they lost. I mean, you lose Landon Sims, that's going to hurt. You lose your best bullpen arm. You know, that's going to definitely hurt you. But, boy, neither one of them. It's just – it's crazy to see them at the bottom of the pack like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you've got Ole Miss and Mississippi State playing this weekend in a battle to stay out of the basement in the SEC West. The SEC standings through 5 weeks, we mentioned in the West, Arkansas is 11-4. Alabama, Auburn, and A&M are all 8-7. LSU, 7-8. Mississippi State, 6-9. And Ole Miss is 5-10. And Bubba, to kind of – hammer home your point about the Rebels. They got beat by Southeastern Missouri State on Tuesday night, 13-3 in Oxford. And it almost feels like Mike Bianco's seat is getting a little hot right now. And I kind of thought that this would happen at some point with Ole Miss just because of his inability to make it to the World Series for how many years that he's been there. I think he's been to one College World Series in 22 seasons. It's why I was so surprised that he didn't maybe be more forceful trying to get the LSU job last offseason, a place where he played. He won a College World Series as a catcher for Skip Bertman. Things may end messy for him in Oxford. That's at least the way that it's starting to feel like.
Do you want to know my opinion on Ole Miss and why they're struggling, Matt? You probably know where I'm going on this.
I think we always know, but go ahead.
Look, here's the thing. Baseball is a team sport. You know, it's built with individuals to, but it's a team sport. And I think Ole Miss, their problem is, and I call it Bush League, and everyone knows, they probably get tired of hearing me say it, but look, they make it about themselves. It's not about the team. It's look what I just did. Oh, look what I just did. And it's all about me, me, me. And I think that's what's wrong with Ole Miss baseball. Watch the Razorbacks play. It's about the team. If a guy's ball to the right side to move a runner, they're going to do it. You know, it's just crazy to me, the two different styles of baseball. And once again, I just think that's why they're where they are. I think good baseball beats bad baseball, and I think Ole Miss plays bad baseball. I think they get away with it because they've got talent. But I think at the end of the day, good baseball wins out, and we're seeing it play out this year so far.
In the SEC East, Tennessee has got a five-game lead over Georgia. The Vols are at the midway point of the SEC with a 14-1 record. And I believe I read somewhere, Bubba, that no team has ever gotten through 15 games with a 14-1 record in SEC play. Just really historic stuff that the Volunteers are doing right now. Georgia's 9-6 in the league. Vanderbilt is 7-8. Florida and South Carolina are both 6-9, and Missouri is tied with Kentucky for last in the SEC East at 5-10. Right now, you've got Missouri, Kentucky, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss. Those are the teams that are really battling to stay out of the, you know, the final two spots where you don't get to go to Hoover at the end of the season. How crazy would that be if you've got a Mississippi school that doesn't get to go to the SEC tournament?
Well, it's crazy. And if you look at who Tennessee's got on the coming up, you know, they got Florida this weekend, they got Auburn, but at the end of the year, they play Mississippi State, and they have Kentucky second to last series, or third to last series. So it didn't get any easier for those teams. Now, I don't know, I don't have Ole Miss's schedule up in front of me, but you know, you look at what Tennessee's doing, and I tell you, it looks like they're going to keep winning. But the thing is, in the SEC, Matt, it can change from week to week, and that's what's crazy about it. Some of the weekends that's happened, you're like, who would have ever thought that? And then the next weekend, something else changes. So I don't know. It's crazy. It's crazy times right now.
Last week's results: Missouri beat Kentucky, Vanderbilt beat Florida in Nashville, Tennessee over Alabama. We'll talk more about that series here in just a second. Mississippi State, a little bit of a surprise, maybe sign that things are getting back in order in Starkville. They did beat Auburn last weekend, 2 of 3 games, took the first 2 of the 3-game series. South Carolina beat Ole Miss. A&M beat Georgia. Of course, the Razorbacks go to play the Aggies this week in College Station. And Bubba, the thing that everybody was talking about at the end of the weekend was Tony Vitello and the ejection going after the umpire, Jeff Macias, an umpire who we talked about last week because of the performance that he had in Game 2 of the Arkansas-Florida series. Apparently, there's a lot of history between Macias and the Tennessee program and maybe the coaching staff in general. I think he's the one who threw out, pardon the pun, but like a volunteer or student assistant coach for Tennessee during one of the regionals last year. What did you make of what happened with Tony Vitello? He's got a 4-game suspension. If you're a coach and you make contact with an umpire, it's an automatic 4-game suspension. If you come back and you do it again, you're gone for the rest of the season. What did you think of that and what you saw from Tony Vitello?
I think it's disappointing. I mean, Tony knows the rule. Well, everyone knows the rule. You can't bump it up. And I think he just lost control. And look, you got to be better than that. I'm sorry. There's no other way to say it. But I see a lot of those antics in his team, Matt. And, you know, Tennessee, yeah, they're 14-1 right now. But you see that team taking on Tony's personality, the good and the bad. And I think somewhere down the road, that's going to come back to haunt them. Because I'll tell you, every manager, every head coach I ever played for, the team became a reflection of him. We took on his personality, so to say. And man, I see it in Tennessee, and it's disappointing because, you know, Tony's got a lot of good qualities. We know he's a great recruiter. He's got a ton of energy. He's got a lot of fight in him. But man, you just can't act like that on a baseball field. You got to be able to control that. And he lost control and bumped him. He's, in my opinion, he's lucky. But as severe as that bump was, I mean, it wasn't an easy chest bump. He's lucky he only got 4 games.
Probably lucky that Jeff Macias was professional enough to walk away too. Tennessee's got a 3-game lead over Arkansas. There aren't a lot of teams that it feels like could catch Tennessee. Maybe Georgia, maybe one of these teams in the West, although I kind of feel like they're going to revert to the mean a little bit in the SEC West. Let's look at Tennessee's remaining schedule, Bubba. They play at Florida this weekend. Then they get Auburn at home, at Kentucky. They get Georgia at home, and they end the season at Starkville. So 3 of their final 5 series are on the road. When you take into consideration what Arkansas's got left, they've got a lot of SEC West games left. They still play Ole Miss, Auburn, Alabama, and A&M. And then they play from the SEC East. Vanderbilt comes in Fayetteville in a few weeks. Do you think Arkansas can catch Tennessee, or do you think that maybe Tennessee's done so much here over the first half of the season that it's going to be hard to catch them?
Man, I'm an internal optimist. I just don't see how we can do it. I mean, I really don't. But, you know, they could go in this weekend to Florida and lose 3. You never know. Plus, they got Auburn. You know, Auburn shows signs of being really good at times. I think they're going to go in and boat race Kentucky. Georgia, it's hard to say. I don't think Georgia can put up a fight. But then, you know, last series against Mississippi State, if Mississippi State's fighting for their life to get into the SEC tournament, Mississippi State could show up that last weekend and you know, do a little bit of damage. But It just doesn't seem like it's going to happen, though. They're just rolling right now. And the thing is, though, it feels like they've peaked already. And is what it is. This is how good they are. Where you look at the Razorbacks, Matt, we got a long way to go. We're still getting better every weekend. And I would rather be where we are right now, to be honest with you.
It's so odd when you look at it, because Arkansas is 11-4 in the SEC. This is the same record that Arkansas had at the midway point last season when they won the conference, a 22-8 record. It's just that, you know, we just haven't seen a team have the type of season that Tennessee's having. This week's series, Vanderbilt's at Kentucky, Missouri's at LSU, South Carolina is at Auburn, Georgia goes to Alabama, Tennessee at Florida, as we mentioned, that's probably the big series to watch, and the Mississippi State will play Ole Miss four times in the upcoming week. They're going to play them three times over the weekend, and then they're going to play again in Pearl, Mississippi on Tuesday night. That's a non-conference game. It's a game that won't count toward the conference records for either of those teams. We see Mississippi State do that with Ole Miss. We see OU do that with Oklahoma State. I think Auburn and Alabama do that. In the coaches poll this week, Tennessee's number one. Arkansas is number three. Georgia's number 10. Didn't fall Georgia, which kind of surprised me given that they had lost the series to Texas A&M. Vanderbilt comes in at number 19. They fell two spots despite beating Florida. Auburn's number 22. LSU fell 11 spots to number 23 after the series loss against the Razorbacks, and the Gators fell out of the coaches' poll. CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers are the best in two towns. Visit the original at 2803 North Arkansas Avenue in Russellville, or the newest location at 3484 West Weddington Drive in Fayetteville, just minutes from the ballpark. Skip the line and order online, or download the app in your app store. CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers, when all you do are burgers, they have to be the best. And Connor Noland also this week was one of 67 pitchers who has been named to the College Baseball Foundation's Pitcher of the Year Award watch list. This is the award, one of many awards, that was won by Kevin Copps a year ago. The SEC's got 9 pitchers on this watch list. In addition to Noland, there are 4 pitchers from Tennessee: Drew Beam, Chase Burns, Chase Dollander, Redmond Walsh, Hunter Barco, your guy, Bubba, from Florida. He's on the list. Joseph Gonzalez of Auburn, Jonathan Cannon of Georgia, and Devin Futrell. Just the accolades kind of keep coming for Connor Noland. People are noticing the type of season he's having. You've got this Pitcher of the Year watch list. He's one of 45 who were on the midseason Golden Spikes watch list. Just a really incredible year for Connor Noland, and it's nice that he's getting some recognition, because, as we've mentioned a lot of times on here, he's the type of pitcher that may not get the headlines and the highlights because of the way he pitches, but I think the stat line kind of speaks for itself.
I think so, and early on in the year we're talking about, well, he pitches to contact, he's got his two-spotter, slider guy. But Matt, if you look at it, he's fourth in the SEC in K's. He's 12th in batting average allowed, allowing a .217 batting average. I mean, so he's really getting it done this year, and he's found ways to not just pitch to contact, but when he needs to dial up that strikeout, he's getting it done. And that breaking ball has just been, the breaking ball has been unhittable this year. It really has. I mean, just the way he's used that pitch. But I go back to, he's a guy that where if one pitch isn't working, and we've seen it out of Razorbacks in the past, like a Blaine Knight, if one pitch isn't working, he's got other weapons he can go to. And he did it against Florida, using his fastball a lot early in the game. And then later in the game, he went more to the breaking balls. So really, really impressed with Connor Noland, and super happy for him, because we know how hard he's worked. And man, seeing him in the weight room during the offseason and just seeing how he's kind of transformed his body, well, I'm super happy for him.
Oh, but did you get a chance to talk to Dick Hughes before the game when he threw out the first pitch last weekend?
No, I didn't. But I tell you what, sitting in the booth, I got goosebumps when I watched it. I watched him throw out the first pitch and then go down the line and shake all the Razorback players' hands. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was a really neat moment. But once again, when I'm in the booth, I got the headset on. And so we're in the middle of doing pregame stuff. And so I didn't get to see the whole thing. But I thought it was awesome.
For people who don't know, Dick Hughes was the 1967 National League Rookie of the Year. He was a starting pitcher that year for the St. Louis Cardinals. And this is a Cardinals staff that I think had 2 Hall of Famers and a couple of perennial All-Stars. And Bob Gibson breaks his leg that year. He takes a line drive off the bat of Roberto Clemente early in the season, and it knocks him out for most of the 67 season. Hughes is a rookie. He's a 29-year-old rookie, and he leads the Redbirds to the World Series. Goes 16-6, has the best record in the National League. The way that Rookie of the Year was done in those days was that the baseball writers had a vote for Rookie of the Year, and then the players had a vote for Rookie of the Year that would be published in the Sporting News. Nick Hughes wins the Sporting News Rookie of the Year. Tom Seaver, who was a rookie that year for the New York Mets, he wins the vote by the baseball writers by, I think, a half point. But Dick Hughes is a guy who kind of, you know, when you talk about these great Razorbacks in professional baseball, you know, who are the guys you go to? You go to Dallas Keuchel and Tom Pagnozzi and, you know, even Andrew Benintendi now. Cliff Lee obviously had a great career. Hughes is kind of a guy that's forgotten, Bubba, because his career wasn't very long. In 1968, he tore his rotator cuff before there was really rotator cuff surgery, and that ended his career. And for the last 50-something years, he's gone and lived on a cattle farm down in southwest Arkansas near about halfway between Magnolia and Camden. But this was his first time to be back in Fayetteville in 52 years, Bubba. He said the last time that he had been back was the big shootout between number one Texas and number two Arkansas in 1969. Just a really neat deal, I thought, for him, an 84-year-old man, to get to come back to campus and be recognized as part of this 100-year celebration. And I talked to him after he threw out the first pitch. I went down and shook his hand and talked with him and his family sitting in the stands. And I mean, just grin ear to ear. Just clearly one of the happiest days of his life.
That's so awesome, Matt. I tell you, whoever's idea it was to bring him back, a huge tip of the hat to them. But that was awesome having him here. And man, I wish I'd have got a chance to talk to him, because I love listening to those old guys talk about the game of baseball. I really love it. So just listening to their stories is just awesome. So I really wish I'd have got a chance to go down and at least just shake his hand and say thank you for everything you've done. And but I thought it was really a neat moment.
Hey, Bubba, I'm sure you've known people like this. You grew up in a little town like I did. You know, you get those old men who've been working on a cattle farm all their life. They've got those strong hands even late into their life. My grandpa was one of those guys. He worked on a cattle farm for, you know, probably 60 years of his life. And I shook Dick Hughes' hand, and at 84 years old, his grip was every bit as good as mine.
Really? Yeah. That's awesome. But I tell you what, he looked like he was in good shape. Still got a pretty good arm action. So, hey. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was a really neat deal to get to see him. As we mentioned, we're recording this before the Razorbacks play Arkansas State in game two of their midweek series. The Razorbacks won game one 10-1 on Tuesday night. Really, the story of the game, I thought, was Brady Slavens and the way that he played. He goes for 4-for-5, hits a grand slam in the seventh inning that kind of breaks the game open, has 4 RBI. And Bubba, since he came back from being benched earlier this month, he's now 21-for-45, 4 doubles, 3 triples, 5 home runs. And don't look now, but he's overtaken Michael Turner and Caden Wallace for the RBI lead on the team. He's got 39 RBI despite not playing very well at all early in the season. It kind of feels like, you know, we talked about this last week. I asked you, is Brady Slavens back? Okay, he's back. But now it feels like he might become a real force high up in this lineup. They're batting him second, and I think he's got a chance to stick there for a little while.
I think so, Matt. You and I talked about before, when Brady gets hot, he's got the kind of potential that can just carry an offense. And he really did it last night. He just kind of put us on his shoulders. But what I like about him is he's having quality at bats. He's laying off of pitches that he was swinging at a few weeks ago. You know, last night's a perfect example. Got a couple of breaking balls down in the zone, took those breaking balls, eventually worked the count to 2-2 and ended up hitting a grand slam to left field. And boy, he hammered that ball. And it was a fastball early in the count. He had gotten 2 fastballs. I can't remember who was on the mound. I want to say it was Bryant on the mound at the time for Arkansas State, or it might've been Pascal. I can't remember who it was, but 2 really good fastballs. Just on the outside corner. Brady didn't swing in either one of them, where in the past he'd had a tendency to get out there and roll over a pitch. He took them, but with 2 strikes, got that same pitch and went with it, hit it into the hog pen, and it was a bomb. But what's neat about last night, Matt, he had a line drive to right. He had a hard hit ground ball up the middle. He had a line drive to left, and then he had the home run to left. So, you know, if you want to look at his exit velos, the 93 was the line drive to right, 100 miles an hour was the ground ball up the middle, 99 was the line drive to left, and then 101 was the home run or the grand slam to left field. So he's taking pitches that are pitcher's pitches, and then he's getting pitches in his zone and crushing them. It's just a beautiful thing to see. And, I'm happy for him because I know he worked hard. You know, he was frustrated. You know, he's a guy that he's a hitter. And I say it all the time, hitters always hit. They're going to hit. And I think Dave taking him out a couple of days, let him watch from the bench, just kind of slow the game down a little bit, did wonders for him. And now he's been a totally different hitter.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about, the fact that he's hitting up the middle and to the opposite field has really been the big difference in him. It looked like early in the season, did you see this? He was trying to pull everything. And maybe that's been the biggest change with him, his swing over the last 4 or 5 weeks.
I think so. He was taking fastballs, change up, down and away, and pulling them and grounding out to second. Just kind of had a long swing. When he would get a fastball in the zone, he would hook it foul because he's outside the ball. Now he's made a conscious effort to work inside the ball and hitting balls to all fields with authority. And I tell you what, Matt, when you stand around the batting cage, when Brady Slavin starts hitting, you know it. Because I always talk about the sound of the ball off the bat. When he hits the ball, it makes a different sound than it does off the other guy's bats. I mean, when he squares one up, you know it.
I thought it was good for Arkansas to see Jace Borfin have some success at the plate last night, because I still feel like, even though he's not going to be a starter unless there's an injury in the outfield, I don't feel like, because of the way it was that Gregory's playing, Lanzilli's obviously playing really well in right field, there's always that need for the guy to come off the bench. And, you know, he's starting to kind of feel like he's getting into rhythm a little bit again at the plate after that shoulder injury knocked him out for about a month.
I think so. He had some pretty good at-bats last night. He struck out once, but had a couple of good at-bats, fouled off some tough pitches, hit a couple balls hard. So, you know, he had a base hit to left. I want to say he took a first pitch fastball away and drove it to left. So, you know, the potential's there, but right now, you know, the way the lineup's structured, boy, it's going to be hard for him to get at-bats. He's got to take advantage of these midweek games. And then, like you said, maybe be a big left-handed bat off the bench later in the year, or if someone starts to struggle or if someone gets hurt. You hate to think about injuries, but injuries happen at this level. And, you know, we always got him to come in there. So hopefully we'll get him, his bat heated back up, because he can be a weapon for us somewhere down the road.
But I've heard a lot of people kind of complaining about Arkansas's schedule, and in particular playing these in-state teams, because of how it affects their strength of schedule. Now, RPI, I think, is always going to take care of itself if you're winning, especially if you're winning in the SEC. And, you know, just in the last week, I think they've jumped from 37th in RPI up to 18th. And that's a big metric. It's not the end-all metric, but it's a big metric when you're talking about potentially trying to get one of those top eight national seeds. The strength of schedule right now for the Razorbacks is 81. But what I think I'm seeing in these midweek games, whether it be the game against UCA that got Dylan Leach going, or the games against UAPB last week that got Zach Morris going, you know, maybe the last night was, you know, something that gets Jace Borfin going, or somebody else who had a good game, because there were a lot of players who played well against Arkansas State, is that Arkansas is finding a lot of value in these midweek games. And even though they're not great competition they're playing, they're able to get valuable playing time for some players. And it seems like we're seeing that carry over into the weekend on multiple occasions this year.
Well, and the thing I like about the midweek games, playing the in-state schools, is, look, a lot of these kids grow up Razorback fans, but they're not all good enough to play at U of A. They go off and they play at Arkansas State, UAPB, Euler, UCA. I like it as a coach. I know a lot of these kids. I've watched a lot of these kids come up in the state of Arkansas playing baseball. And so I think the in-state stuff is really good for the state of Arkansas, just baseball in general. And, you know, you want to see these kids develop and grow and get better. And so, you know, one of my pitchers last night, that a kid that I've worked with coming up through the years, Walker Williams, closed out the game last night for Arkansas State, pitched the last inning, got three up, three down, was able to get Robert Moore, Jace Borfin, and Jalen Battles on three consecutive outs. And so that was really, for me, that was really neat to see. I know there were a lot of kids there. He's a Shiloh kid. There were a lot of Shiloh kids there. Actually, several of them were sitting right below my booth. So there's a lot of good that comes out of these games. But like you referred to, it's a lot of it's these midweek guys getting their innings in, guys that aren't able to pitch on the weekend, are able to get in there midweek, get their innings in, you know, possibly show Van Horn or Hobbs something to get into a weekend series. And so that's what's really cool about it. Zach Morris is a perfect example, coming against UAPB, striking out the side. Well, he gets a chance to pitch against LSU and goes 2 2/3 and was really good. And so that's the best thing about these midweek games. I guess I don't stress about the strength of schedule and all that, because at the end of the day, you got to win in the SEC to go where we want to be. And so I think we're going to be in good shape.
Also think when you get those players who didn't get to play for the Razorbacks, you're going to get more effort from the teams that are coming in here in the midweek than maybe in some of the other instances. And I should have noted too, Bubba, that Braden Webb, he also got going in a midweek series against Grambling State, hit the grand slam in that game. And he's been really key to this run that they've had early in the SEC.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot all about Braden Webb, but you're exactly right. That really got him going. And now look where he's at, you know, in the middle of our lineup, just doing a tremendous job.
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Great therapists and estheticians go along with a new service that I am truly excited about. Rapid Tension Relief uses a special tool that will melt the tension and soreness away. Trust me, you will not be disappointed in the results. I highly recommend this feature along with a total body stretch assisted stretch program. Whether you are competing at a high level or just want to relax, these services are for everyone. Massage, rapid tension relief, total body stretch, deep muscle treatment massage, you choose. Or you can try any combination of those. So the next time you're feeling tight, make sure to call my friends at Massage Envy.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Grease Pig, this is Mike.
Coming in hot! So I can just stay in my vehicle during my oil change?
That's right. The Grease Pig wants to help keep you safe, so now you can stay in your vehicle during your oil change.
These guys are working like a pit crew.
That's part of our 17-point inspection, where we check your belts and hoses, we check and fill all your fluids, and offer full repair on all vehicles. And of course, we use Castrol products.
Why do I smoke coffee?
You know our waiting room is still open.
And give up front row seats to my own oil change? No thank you. You're doing awesome! Mike, I think I'm making them uncomfortable.
Get into the Grease Pig, your local automotive specialist for over 20 years.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Let's take a look at the week ahead, presented by Grease Pig.
Arkansas will play three games this week in College Station against the Aggies. The first game Friday night, it'll be a 7:30 first pitch, and that game will be televised on SEC Network. The teams are also scheduled to play Saturday at 2 p.m. and Sunday at 1 p.m. Both of the final two games will be on SEC Network Plus. We mentioned the Aggies are off to a really good start in SEC play, 8-7 in their first season under Jim Schlossnagel. And they come into the game against Arkansas, not only having beaten Georgia last weekend, a ranked Georgia team, but they really, you know, they beat the shoes off of Dallas Baptist on Tuesday night. I think that final was 14-1 in a 7-inning run rule. The week ahead is brought to you by the Grease Pig. For 20 years, they have specialized in serving UA students, faculty, and staff with two locations in Fayetteville on College Avenue and MLK Boulevard. The Grease Pig has experience for all your repair needs and, of course, complete service oil changes staffed with ASE-certified master technicians. They also provide tires and alignment services at their location on College Avenue. The Grease Pig, it's all about taking care of you, a proud supporter of the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Bubba, we mentioned Jim Schlossnagel is in his first year as A&M's coach, came over after a long time at TCU, took the Horned Frogs to 5 College World Series. And it was surprising to me a little bit when I saw that he was taking the A&M job last year. For one, TCU had kind of been a thorn in A&M's side in the postseason for a number of years. So I guess I can see where the Aggies really wanted him. It just seemed like he had everything set up there to have this long, successful career where he never had to worry about job security in Fort Worth. And so it was surprising to me to see him take the College Station job. But he's a coach that I think has a ton of respect throughout the profession, and it's going to be interesting to see what he can do with the Aggies.
You know, I think he's going to do great there, Matt. I really do. And, you know, being right there recruiting the state of Texas, you know, I think he's a good guy for the job right there. I've always liked him. I loved how he coached the TCU, the Horned Frogs for years. So I think he's going to do a good job. He's one of those guys you don't hear a lot of bad things about him, or you hear a lot of good things about him. Players seem to like him. So I think he's going to be a good fit there.
His TCU teams were always teams that I felt like could pitch. I mean, you remember when Nick Lodolo came in here a few years ago for that regional? I mean, what an incredible pitcher. But that wasn't the only one. It seems like he's always had really strong starting pitching. That's really the thing that surprised me a little bit about, I guess, where A&M right now is that their pitching staff, the numbers are okay, but the starting pitching, they don't have that Asa Lacy. They don't have that Nick Lodolo that Jim Schlossnagle had when he was at TCU. That may be the area where I think Arkansas's got a nice advantage this weekend when they go down to College Station, is I think Arkansas may have the starting pitching that's better than A&M. And I don't know that you could say that every year when these teams have met.
Well, I think you're right, Matt. I think they, if you look at their pitching staff overall, you know, their batting average against is 251. You know, the Razorbacks are holding opponents to 218 batting average. There's a huge difference there. Starting pitching wise, they don't have like that dominant guy. You know, their Friday night guy has been Nathan Detmer. He's pretty good, you know, but he's 48 innings, 50 hits, 45 strikeouts. You know, he throws a lot of strikes. He's only walked 9, holding batters to 258 batting average, but that's, you know, those aren't really numbers that jump off the page at you. So I really think that there's a definite advantage with starting pitching going into there, because I think we're going to hit these guys. I don't think they have a guy that we really fear. I think we'll be able to score some runs against them.
Well, I don't know if you're like me. You know, one of the things I always like to look at in baseball is the last 10 record, not necessarily the overall record, but what teams have done in their last 10, because I think it's a sport that is so predicated on momentum. And A&M's got a little momentum right now. I mean, you look at their last 10 games, it starts with a series loss at Alabama in a rubber game in Tuscaloosa on April 3rd. But since that point, they beat Texas State in the midweek. Obviously, Texas State has had a lot of success this year. You know, we saw what they did with that midweek series against the Longhorns. They played Kentucky twice, beat them twice at Bluebell Park. They went to Corpus Christi and beat A&M Corpus Christi on a Tuesday night. Then got on a plane and went over to Georgia. They won 8-1, and then they won the finale, but 23-9. And I mentioned they beat Dallas Baptist last night, 14-1. It's a team that's really hot, and I think that's a big key. I know Arkansas is hot too, so this is a really interesting series, because you got two teams that seem to be playing really well on a collision course this weekend.
Well, I like how you look at the last 10 games. I do that a lot, Matt, because, you know, baseball, teams are so streaky. They're hot and they're cold. The lineup's really hot for a couple of games, and then they cool off. But you watch them. They've been scoring a lot of runs lately. So I think it's going to be a good test for the Arkansas pitching staff. But, man, I just like the matchup. I really do. Looking over their stats, they're kind of top heavy. They got some guys at the top of the lineup. They got Jack Moss hitting 380. Dylan Rock, 347, both really good players. But, you know, once you get down to that lower part of the lineup, you know, they don't have the strength that a Razorback lineup has. I mean, we'll beat you 1-9. And so I really like the matchup. I think we're going to go in there and do well this weekend.
Yeah, they've also got Austin Post, who jumped up with a big game against DBU the other night. He's hitting 349, an OPS of 925. It seems like Arkansas has seen a lot of these type of teams this year. You know, we mentioned LSU had a ton of guys who were hitting, what, like 326 and higher. Missouri was the same way. Kentucky was the same way. So it's not going to be a surprise to the Razorbacks to see a really stacked, you know, lineup. But it seems like they have pitched well against those. I guess maybe the big difference is that with most of those, they got to play them in Fayetteville. Now they've got to go on the road and beat A&M. Connor Nolan has pitched well away from home. It'll be interesting to see how Jackson Wiggins and Hagan Smith handle this, especially Smith, because, you know, Bullard, Texas, where he grew up, isn't just too far from College Station. There are going to be a lot of people there, I would have to assume, there to watch him on Saturday night. It's going to be a real test of you know, his maturity, I think. He's been a much better pitcher in Fayetteville, but he's had some shaky outings on the road.
I think you said it there, Matt. A lot of times when you go on the road, it's not really – you're going back close to your hometown. He's going to have his family and friends there. Sometimes that's more stressful than, or it actually is more stressful than the actual game itself playing at A&M. But hey, that's always been a crazy place to play. I remember back in the day going into A&M and their fans were crazy, man. It was a hostile environment, but it was a lot of fun. I loved going there as a visiting player and playing there. But it can be a tough place to play if you let it get to you.
Bullard, Texas is 142 miles from College Station, so that's about a 2.5-hour drive. I certainly think that there will be a lot of people there for Hagen. You mentioned that you've been to College Station. Am I right? I think in 1989, Arkansas clinched the Southwest Conference title for the first time. Was this your freshman year, Bubba?
Sophomore.
Okay, so the first Southwest Conference title, though, you clinched it with a 16-inning win in College Station. What do you remember about that game?
I remember it was crazy. It went back and forth. So I remember getting off the bus and there were fans lined up all the way down the sidewalk where we got off the bus, and people were already chanting my name. You know, I was having a pretty good year at the time. And so it was me and it was my roommate, Greg D'Alexander. And they're like, you know, all chanting, "Where's Bubba? Where's Bubba?" You know, it was crazy. And it just went on from there. They were there for batting practice, but it was a great environment. I heard some of the best rags coming from the stands that I think I ever heard. So, it was a lot of fun. But that 16-inning game, you know, what was neat is there wasn't so as much media, obviously, way back then. But I know there were a couple of bars here. There's a place called Doc Murdoch's, and they were announcing the score and the inning all the way throughout that game, because it didn't end till late in the night. And so I thought it was kind of cool, people keeping up with us. But yeah, that was Norm's first Southwest Conference championship right there.
Yeah, I think Norm said that he kind of walked away after Greg D'Alexander had a big hit in the top of the 16th inning. It was a two-run Texas leaguer, I think, if I've read it correctly. He said, you know, he kind of went away from the dugout just to kind of compose himself to get ready for that moment. That was you talk about all these stepping stones in building Arkansas's baseball program. That's probably a little bit of an underrated one that was really big for the Razorbacks to, you know, put themselves into position where Dave Van Horn could take over the type of program that he did.
Well, I'd like to think that we had a little input in that. But it was, you know, we had good teams back then. I mean, we really were. Now, we weren't playing in the SEC, but back then, you know, Southwest Conference was a powerhouse. And, you know, we would, there were a few years there where we were winning 50 games a season. And, you know, we went out and we played hard. We played Razorback baseball back then, just like the guys do now. And good baseball beats bad baseball. So we found ways to win. And so it was a lot of fun, a lot of really good memories. But we were so happy for Norm DeBryan to get that win for him. And, you know, I still have the ring today. And so it's a really neat thing.
Okay, I've actually got the newspaper article pulled up here, Bubba. You know where Norm watched the final inning from?
Where?
The bullpen. He said, "I went completely numb." He said, I went out to the bullpen. I don't know why I went out there, but that's where I went.
Hey, that's awesome though. But hey, I will tell you, Matt, it was a crazy environment that game. It really was, but it was a whole lot of fun. And out of all the games I played in my career, that was one that really stood out. And it was special.
Am I right that where Bluebell Park is now, that's where the stadium has always been? It's just they had a big renovation about 10 years ago.
Yeah, you know what? I don't remember the ballpark as much as I do. I remember getting off the bus thinking, holy cow, what is going on? Because that was a first for me to have fans lined up down this both sides of the side when we're walking into the ballpark there for batting practice. It was pretty cool. It was a neat thing. And then you know, after the game, all the fans wanted to take us out to dinner and take us out on the town and everything. So it was cool, but it was a lot of fun.
You know, Arkansas's had some weekends down there in the past where they've shown some really good power. I mean, remember 2017, Chad Spanberger, when he went on that end of year run, I think that's kind of where it began, was in College Station with one or two big blasts in some of those games. I remember Casey Martin hitting one to a building that was across the street in 2019. It seems like it's the type of park that when you get into this time of year, the ball starts to fly a little bit more. And maybe this weekend's a chance where these teams could show a little bit more power.
Well, I tell you, looking at their home run totals, they've got 34 home runs. We have 55. And if you look at all the balls that have been knocked down, we could easily have, I don't want to say maybe 20 knocked down, but there's been at least probably 15 balls knocked down in the wind here at Baum Walker. And then you look at the wind right now, it's blowing tonight. It's supposed to blow 20 miles an hour again out of the south, so blowing in again. I was talking to some of the guys during batting practice about it yesterday, and they're like, oh, my goodness, when's the wind going to shift? But hopefully you're right. Hopefully we'll show up. I know the guys will be super excited if they show up there Friday or Thursday for practice. And, you know, that wind's blowing the other direction. They're gonna love it.
Oh, but what do you think is the big key to the series this weekend?
I still think starting pitching, Matt. I really do. I think we have a definite edge starting pitching. If we can keep getting the performances we've been getting, I think that Friday night game is huge. Nathan Detmers, he's got good stuff. He's a guy that knows how to pitch. If we'll stick with our approach at the plate, he's not going to walk a lot of guys. He's going to throw strikes, but what we have to do is hunt our strike. Can't be swinging at his pitch. We've got to wait till we get our pitch and do some damage with it. But I think it's important to go out there Friday night and get that win. And if Connor Nolan pitches like he's done all year, I think we'll go get that victory Friday night. And then from there, I think we're in good shape.
Come to WholeHogSports.com throughout the weekend for our coverage from College Station. The Razorbacks and the Aggies playing three games in what should be a big weekend in the SEC West standings. For Bubba Carpenter, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you next week on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.